Hey everybody, and welcome to the New Gamer Nation podcast, episode 8. I am your host, Pilot, as always, and with us today is Ian and Justin from zombiehood.com. Say hello, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing, guys?
So, let's just jump right into it and start off with what we are playing. So, why don't you start us off, Ian? What have you been up to?
Well, as I mentioned, like, the last podcast we did with you, I was going to replay through 1 and 2 of Mass Effect to kind of catch up and get my perfect Shepard character for Mass Effect 3. So I played Mass Effect 1, I beat it, and have like a newfound love for that game compared to after playing Mass Effect 2. Not that they're bad in any sense, but yeah, and so I'm working on Mass Effect 2 now, and then I don't know if it's from your guys' podcast or what, but God of War was like, for some reason I really wanted to start playing that over again, so I did that. And then, I'm like, you know, 10% done with the game and might hop back to it. And then, I've been playing the Magic 2012 every so often.
Okay. So have you been molding your Shepard character as you had hoped?
I have actually. In the first time I played it, I don't mean to do any spoilers. I'm sure there's a lot of people that have already played both games. So if there's a spoiler, I'm sorry. But anyways, I got with Liara the first time. I didn't even know you could get with Ashley.
Uh-huh.
And so after seeing some of the like screen pictures from Mass Effect 3 and the fact that Ashley's back in it, I'm like, you know, I probably should go put the moves on her, which I did. And then I started up Mass Effect 2, and something I never saw there was if you go to your captain's quarters or whatever, there's a picture of Ashley on your desk. And my sole goal when I started Mass Effect 2 was like, all right, I'm going to get with Miranda. I'm going to turn her to not like Cerberus, because apparently you can do something like that. I'm like, you know, I'm going to hit on her. Oh, man, it's going to be awesome. And then I go to my captain's quarters, and there's that picture of Ashley staring at me. Like, crap, I better not do that, because in Mass Effect 3, she's going to be like, ooh, you slept with Miranda. I hate you. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I'm going to stay faithful in my video game character.
Yeah, well, good for you. I'm sure all the female listeners will appreciate that.
All right.
So what about you, Justin? What have you been up to?
Well, I was playing through Mass Effect 1 as well. I finally did what I've been trying to do, and I got the Power Gamer achievement, which is reach level 60. I did that yesterday. Been playing through trying to finish Puzzle Quest still, which I think I'm close to doing that. And actually, I was playing a lot of FIFA 11 last week as well, messing around with the Ultimate Team and selling cards and whatnot, and buying new cards and characters for the FIFA Ultimate Team series.
Yeah, I've heard that with the Ultimate Team set, like, you have to dump a ton of cash into it to be competitive at all. Have you found that?
It depends on the skill level of the player. I know both Ian and I got addicted last summer with the World Cup into dumping cash into using Microsoft points to buy packs. And I was doing that up until a certain point. But if you're a heady player, and maybe if you make an investment of like, I don't know, $10 or $15 to buy a couple of packs and get you started, from there on, you can start getting some of the good players' cards or whatnot by selling and wheeling and dealing in the market they have there. But the thing comes down to is like they have their inform cards, which is a upgraded version of a player based on his weekly performances in real life. And that can get pretty addicting one to get inform cards depending on what type of team you're trying to build. But if you're not as heady or not as into FIFA, yeah, it can become pretty expensive to build a team that's worthwhile.
Well, it sounds like you're having a good time, so I guess that's the main thing, right?
Yeah.
All right, so I've been playing Shadows of the Damned over the past couple of weeks. I'm up to the end boss right now, and overall, I, you know, again, as people that have been listening know, that I'm a pretty big fan of this game, and I still stick by that even at the end of the hard run.
Is Shadows of the Damned, is that a sequel of another game or related to another game at all?
No, it's a completely new intellectual property.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all new, but you know, like I said, it's excellent, and I recommend it to anybody that's even remotely interested. It's a good game.
Is that a PS3 only or Xbox or PC?
It's multi-platform, so okay, it's everything. Yeah, been playing a little Duke Nukem. But just been dragging my feet through it since a lot of new stuff has come out since then.
Mm-hmm.
Been playing a little Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon, which has been pretty interesting, especially since I haven't been playing the series since the beginning. But again, it's pretty good, especially for a budget title. It's pretty good.
Is that the one that's like on Xbox? It's games on demand. Like, is it an older title or is it like brand new?
Yeah, it's an older title. I think it came out around 06, 07, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was just one of those games that caught like a cult following and has kind of blown up since.
See, because I think I've seen like the game, you know, at like GameStop or whatever. And I'm like, interesting. You know, like I don't know. There's something about it that draws me to it, and then I'm like, I've never heard of this, so I apparently don't care for it, and then I walk away.
Yeah, it's to describe it the best way I possibly can. It's just a game where you just get a bunch of guns and you just shoot everything. I would say it's kind of similar to like, you know, Dynasty Warriors.
Oh, okay.
Or something like that, where you're just flooded with enemies and you're just taking them all out as quickly as you can.
Oh, that sounds a little more interesting than what I thought it was.
Yeah, and then you level up, you get bigger guns, and you go after them again, and it's just it's like that grind them out kind of a, you know, Dynasty Warriors game, I'd say.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And, you know, for $40, you can't go wrong. And the last game I've been playing is Fear 3. Now, I haven't played a whole lot of this game, but it's so far it's been pretty good. I haven't really played any of Fear 2, so I'm definitely missing some key story elements.
Mm-hmm.
But I did play Fear 1, so there was some continuation from that, which I recognized.
Okay.
But yeah, they changed this game quite a bit from what it used to be.
Yeah, it looked like it kind of got the, I want to call it the EA polish. I don't know if it's EA, but kind of how Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2 have that different, like, it's more of an action, like, you know, it has that weight behind it now that it's its own entity and characters and whatnot.
Yeah, well, the first game was on the PC, and it was like this scary, atmospheric first-person shooter kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they've kind of just made it like a first-person shooter, military shooter kind of thing.
Really? So they took out, like, the creepy little girl and...
She's still in there, but they don't really use, like, the environment and the characters to their benefit. You know, they don't make it so that it's scary on its own merits. Like, now it's just kind of, I don't know, it just doesn't have that same effect. Like, it doesn't scare you in the same ways where it would build things up. Like, things just kind of happen now. I would say it's like kind of like comparing a, you know, like a Freddy Krueger movie to like an Exorcist kind of movie.
Oh, okay.
You know, like a jump out and scare you kind of thing, or like a psychological make you think and now you're scared kind of thing.
That sounds like the jump Resident Evil 4 made, where it wasn't, Resident Evil 4 didn't really scare anybody. It just, they sent so many enemies, they overwhelmed you. Whereas if you play any of the old Resident Evils, it was more like, you were saying, a jump out, try and scare you moment that would freak you out, or build up to something that's going to be really scary. Whereas in Resident Evil 4, I never felt that way. It was just like, here's a ton of enemies, they're coming at you. It's more overwhelming and trying to fluster you than really scare you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's a pretty good example. Yeah, that's what I would say is happening. But let's move on to our next segment. This one is about THQ purchasing ads from Google that are kind of intrusive by nature. So why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, and I read about this earlier today. Yeah, sure. So I read about this earlier today, and I have yet to experience it. I was like, as soon as I read about it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to try it out. But basically what people were reporting is that if you do a search for like Uncharted 3 or any of the new titles that are coming out, Battlefield 3, anything like that, a little ad will pop up and say, are you sure you want to look at that game? Why not come over to Saints Row and check us out? Or, you know, something like that, kind of like invading your so-called space. But essentially, it would be no different than any other ad, really. But on top of that, something that I thought was interesting was if you go to modernwarfare3.com, it redirects directly to the Battlefield 3 site, which, from what I read, people aren't sure if that's something that EA did or if it's like just a, you know, hardcore fan of, was like, screw you, Modern Warfare, go to Battlefield 3. But one of the things I was reading about it and I thought was kind of interesting was one of the writers said that by doing that, don't you essentially think of Modern Warfare 3 whenever you think of Battlefield 3? Like, his argument was that it almost hinders the Battlefield 3 reputation. And I'm not sure if I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I personally wouldn't agree with that either. I think that just timing-wise, those two games are going to be compared quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're definitely of their own merit. You know, they're just because one happens, you know, somebody bought ModernWarfare3.com and pointed it to the Battlefield site, I don't think necessarily hurts or hinders either title.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I would say that, you know, if you're just surfing the web and you're trying to look up something on ModernWarfare3.com, one, you probably want to find out about Modern Warfare 3, and you're specifically looking for that. So being redirected to Battlefield is only going to affect you in the sense that, it's not really what I'm looking for, so I'm going to jump and try and find whatever, you know, Activision site is for ModernWarfare3.com. And if you're a Battlefield fan, it's just something funny to stick it in the COD community. So yeah, I agree. I don't think it really hinders or helps. I think it's just kind of is. It's not really anything really to get up in arms about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's just something that's trying to get their name in the headlines.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. So.
And so, what do you think about those the ads that are becoming a little more intrusive?
Well, it depends. It's like it kind of brings up the point of like if you play FIFA or Madden or anything, if you play it, I think online, the ads actually show up like a Snickers, like a Snickers brought to you by Snickers or any of the other like NFL sponsors or whatever. And I'm not going to say that I'm torn. I actually kind of like that ads are in there only to the point that they're not like intrusive and taking over the game. Like I think Burnout Paradise or whatever had like Subway ads in it. And it just kind of gives that element of like, you're really in this gaming world because things that exist in your world now exist like in this game world. Like, I'm going to take my super high-performance car, do a jump, crash through a subway sign, and not necessarily land in the subway. But it kind of, I don't know, it kind of, like, merges the worlds together in a way.
Well, how do you view that? Do you think that these ads are going to hurt your experiences with the game?
As long as they're minimal, like, you know, like I was saying, like, in NFL, it just kind of pops up. It doesn't really bother me. I know that there's some people that, like, you know, get furious. It's, like, kind of the same thing as product placement in movies. If they do it like extremely obvious where somebody's like going to drink a Coke and like aim it at the camera and be like, I need this refreshing Coke, like, you know, get that out of here. But when it's just in the background kind of thing,
it depends on how it's done. You know, examples like if you're walking by in a game or in Burnout Paradise and they're changing the billboards to meet advertisements, well, it's a billboard, it's supposed to be an advertisement, so I don't care if it's a real world advertisement or if it's a fake advertisement. And I think they actually did that in Rainbow Six Vegas too, didn't they? They had actual,
yeah, wasn't it like
billboards that were of some ilk, and I know they changed over time depending on whatever, you know, who had purchased something or whatnot. So that doesn't bother me. It can also be done ironically in games, like humorously, which is good. You know, if it's done for the sake of humor, like it's so over the top, it's funny, it can be good. But if it's, you know, a semi-serious game or something that's trying to be serious, and like Ian was saying, it's just so blatantly obvious that it becomes annoying. That's where, you know, it can get testy. But yeah, generally, it depends on how the ads are done. Like Ian was saying, the NFL ads for Madden aren't that bad. I know in FIFA, you know, they have the classic back billboards along the pitch that depict, you know, if any of their sponsors, be it Adidas or, you know, whoever might be sponsoring for the FIFA game. So, yeah, it all depends on how it's done. And that breaks or tells me whether I'm going to get angry or whether it's just like, oh, it's an advertisement. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, the way that I see it is we're advertised to so much in today's society. Like, you can walk down the street and you'll be advertised to 100 times. And it's, like, become so commonplace that there's, like, few places you can go where you're not advertised to. And especially now that, you know, Madden is like taking things to a new level and bringing in even trophies that are sponsored by, you know, NFL sponsors. I think it's just getting crazy, and there's no benefit to the gamer. So it's not like they're reducing the price of the game or they're giving you some DLC for free that was sponsored by one of their sponsors or whatever. Like, you get nothing, so your experience doesn't change from one game to another. And I would sooner adopt sponsorships in video games if they would do one of those things, like give you DLC and advertisement and that, or they would, you know, drop the price. Or the worst offense for me is if Madden is going to charge you $10 if you buy the game used to use it online, and they're going to advertise to you on top of that. I'd say at least if they're going to advertise to you, at least let people buy the game used. I mean, do you really need that $10 when Right Guard is going to give you a couple of million dollars for that?
Yeah, I was just going to say real quick, I think that like that whole EA Pass, the whole online thing is, and I think we talked about this before, but the $10 regardless is just, I think that's stupid.
I guess the counter argument to what you're saying, though, is what they would say is that we talked about last time with the tough economic times that some of the companies are having, that these advertisements are actually keeping down the prices of their creations or their development process, so they don't have to charge you extra. And I understand what you're saying, but to that point, you know, I remember an old Calvin and Hobbes comic that the punchline was that we're all walking billboards. I mean, I'm wearing a shirt that's for Olympic Marseille, a French soccer league team, and it has a giant Adidas thing on my shirt, and you know, I'm a walking billboard for this team, and that was just because I thought the shirt was cool. I know who the team is, but I just enjoyed the shirt. I understand what you're saying, and it's a good point, because you would think that, like you were saying, if Right Guard or Snickers or whoever's going to pay, you know, $500,000 to get this little blurb in the Madden game, could that be directed some way and in some way, shape, and form to the fans and for whatever, be it some type of online pass, like you were saying, for something exclusive, or maybe Right Guard directs you to their site, at which point, because you put in like this coupon or code you got in Madden, and it gets you a discount on whatever, like Snickers is like, go to Snickers.com, and you go to Snickers.com, and you say, I found it on Madden 11, and they're like, all right, here's a coupon for a free candy bar at
any of your That'd be cool. I'll take free candy bars.
That's right. So yeah, I guess I agree in that way. I just don't see the companies doing that, but maybe the companies that are paying to have the advertisements could do something to get you to their site and give you some type of free product in that way. That would probably be more likely than us seeing anything back from the actual video game companies for seeing advertisements.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, we're never going to see a dime of that money, but you can't scream poverty when other gaming companies are putting out games at the same price point that don't need to sell ads in their video games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and when you said ads, I immediately thought, I watched tons of, like, YouTube video game ads, and ads on YouTube are getting out of hand. Like, you're trying to watch a YouTube video, and, like, Ian and I were trying to watch something on The Old Republic, and they had that ad that pops up at the bottom of the screen, and it just sits there. It doesn't go away, and you actually have to physically move over and click it to make it go away. And I'm like, dude, does it really need to have to pop up on the actual screen for us to watch it? It's so intrusive. I just want to learn about what's happening in the game and whatnot and see the visuals.
See, but at least with YouTube, they share the revenue.
Yeah, that's true. You can't get partnered to make a bit of revenue off of that.
Yeah, so at least then somebody's getting something other than everybody else, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, so let's move over to our next segment here. There was an article in Game Informer that about the Sony Welcome Back package, and they stated that this was an overwhelming success for Sony. As soon as they released those products, you know, sales on the PSN have been up, I think, about 20%, and the titles that they were offering for free, especially Infamous and Little Big Planet, have accelerated sales for the sequels. So Infamous 2 and Little Big Planet 2 have sold a lot better recently. So it brings us to an interesting conundrum on whether or not this would be a good idea to implement as a regular thing for people, where you can go and download an older game, you know, something that came out in 2008, 2007, that you just get it for free, and that this would somehow stimulate future sales of that product or that intellectual property. So what do you guys think? Do you think that there's something to this?
I would love to say that there's something to this, but it's going to be tough to, you know, obviously get publishers to agree on that. But it's like, once sales start trickling off of, like, Little Big Planet 1, once, like, they've made their money back, essentially made profits on it, and then nobody's really buying the game anymore, I could totally see it be like, you know, oh, Little Big Planet 2 is coming out. Reserve it and get Little Big Planet free. Or, gosh, I don't want to say reserve because then you bring GameStop into this. But I know, not from personal experience, but like my brother got Infamous, the first one, as his free title, which he never would have played before. And because of that, he like became a big fan of the game and like went out and got Infamous 2 as well.
What I could see happening is, how about meeting halfway? I mean, let's take, I play Xbox Live, so I see a lot of their titles. A lot of the old game titles are $19.99 or whatever, so you're paying $20. What if, at like a title, like you were saying, what if Fallout 3, which I think is on there for $20, and at the start of New Vegas, they did a promotion leading up to it that says, buy Fallout 3 for, you know, instead of $20, basically like 800 Microsoft points. So you're getting a full game for the price of an arcade game. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the developer and Microsoft make money off of what you're doing, but you're getting a game at an incredibly discounted price. And then on top of that, they could also offer a promotion like for a limited time, maybe on the weekend that says, you know, for a game like Fallout 3, where it says, buy for 800 Microsoft points and then get all downloadable content for, you know, an additional 800 Microsoft points, which is, I think, you know, you bought them all brand new, right? All the downloads for Fallout?
For the first Fallout?
Yeah. It was like, what, $40 or $50 worth of
it? It is pretty close to that, yeah.
Yeah, so essentially you're saving a ton of money and you get a game for really cheap. Yeah.
Although I have to interrupt you real quick. The bright side to that story is because I did that, anybody that did it that way, that bought them individually for the full price, were given a premium Fallout theme, which, granted, isn't that great, but at least it's something. It's kind of like their thank you for giving them my money, you know?
Well, I've seen this kind of go through the retail sector. I know recently Kmart was offering a special with Yakuza 4, that where the actual deal was if you bought Yakuza 4, you'd get Yakuza 3 for free. And I've seen another one similar to that on the retail front. It might have been through Amazon or something like that. But the beauty of this particular program was that these games were given out for free. Anybody can buy them. Get it, pick it up, download it whenever you want. And you had a 30-day period to download it. And I think that's what really got people into these games. I mean, there was no risk. There's no money. There's no exchanging. They didn't even have to leave their couch. Yet they had access to these games that, you know, they never seen or heard of or wanted to play before. You know, say if you go all the way back to like Layer, right? One of their launch titles to the PS3. And they just gave it out for free. You know, do you think that would help with the sales if they ever wanted to release a Layer 2?
Yeah, I think it would. The problem is that I don't see them ever implementing that because it probably is in essence good business practice. They're still going to want to make money off of it, and they might not feel that they're going to see enough on the second game to validate going and doing it for free.
Yeah.
But if you were to really push the promotions, like, I mean, sometimes I see promotions on the Xbox Live dashboard, and maybe that's just because the dashboard for Xbox Live is so much better than what the PS3's is in advertising that stuff. And I actually have that up just to see what's coming out. I'll see things on that for sale, and then I will go buy them as they're on for sale. And that, you know, on a sale term, I can see them doing that. On a retail side, like you were saying, for Target or GameStop, that especially makes sense on the retail side, because you can get people in, especially if you're advertising on TV, like GameStop tends to do for reserve things. If you're advertising, like, you know, saying, let's take Mass Effect 3, like, you know, buy reserve and buy Mass Effect 3, and, you know, for $10 you can get Mass Effect 1 and 2 if you don't have them or something. You know, something really cheap, or even free, you can get Mass Effect 2 or Mass Effect 1 for free by reserving. On a retail side, I gotta believe that during that, while they're doing that, they're gonna see a lot of people coming in to go in and reserve and buy the games just based on getting a free game for doing that. And again, while that would be nice with the downloadable, the games on demand, I can't bring myself to see them doing that despite the boost in sales they saw with Infamous 2 and Little Big Planet 2.
Well, do you still hold that stance, taking into account all the sales that Steam has generated for titles in general?
Steam is very interesting with the deals. I heard they were running some type of promotion where if you were getting achievements in the games you purchased from Steam. There, it was like they were doing a raffle entry based on the achievements you get. And the more achievements you get from games you own bought from, you got into this raffle and they would give you 10 free games. But I'm not sure on the supply side how Steam is able to sell them for so cheap during their giant Steam sales. And it's not, you know, it's not always bad games. I've heard of people getting really good quality titles that came out, you know, a year or two ago. Like super cheap, yeah, like $5.
Yeah, like Mass Effect 1 was $5 on Steam for I think a week, and Mass Effect 2 was $10. Essentially, it's probably they're taking a hit themselves to drive up, you know, business for the Steam service. So they might not have, you know, maybe they have a certain quota, like you have to have so many downloaded games, and when they don't reach that, or they see that it's slacking and it could be better, then they'll run these, you know, super cheap sales, which would be great for everybody, of course, if you can play on the PC if you have a computer that's fast enough.
Yeah, well, they do it so cheap because there's no console development fees as there are consoles. So that takes $10 off the top right there. But, you know, and again, who knows how they can get away with selling these games so cheap. But, you know, they managed to find a way, and they're selling titles like crazy.
One thing that I was just thinking of is I wonder if piracy plays a factor into that. I mean, if the developer, like EA, knows that people are getting Mass Effect for free just by going to a pirate site, or you can have the real version via Steam, you know, they're probably a lot happier with that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure most people would buy a full version game, you know, for $5 rather than pirate it just for the convenience factor alone.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things is kind of like off topic, but one of the things that I think would be fairly interesting, and I'm not sure how it would work or if it could work, but instead of having your physical retail release date, like have a on-demand release date that is kind of synced up with the retail release date of a brand new game. So I think that, I mean, people are generally pretty lazy. And if they go on their Xbox and they see that, you know, whatever, Battlefield 3 came out that day, and they could just download it as opposed to driving to the store, I don't know. I'd like to see a instant games on demand the day it comes out on consoles. I think it's on PCs you can do that.
Yeah, well, then they start getting, that starts encroaching on retailers.
Yeah.
And the retailers sell video games. I mean, 90% of those sales are through those stores. So you start cutting them out of the picture, things are going to get ugly fast.
Well, that's what they want to do anyways with their online pass and whatnot.
Well, they just want to stop the sale of used games.
Games, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, with those new games, you can't cut them out. Otherwise, they're gonna kill somebody. All right, so this is going to bring us to our first break, so stick around and we'll be right back. So let's continue the conversation with yet another Game Informer article, which talks about the new version of Windows coming out, Windows 8, and its ability to support Xbox 360 games. So why don't you give us your overall reaction, Ian?
Yeah, well, I thought it was pretty interesting. If you could access your, you know, dashboard, your games, you know, pop a disc in and play it on your computer, granted, I would need a computer that's good enough to do that. It seems fitting for Windows and Microsoft for their kind of like Windows / Microsoft everywhere. You have your phone, you have your game console, you have your Windows 8 system, and now you can not even need your Xbox. You can just put your games right into the PC. So part of me thinks it's cool, but then it's like I start worrying about having to get a system that's able to keep up with that when my Xbox works fine.
So what about you, Justin? What's your core reaction?
When I heard about this, my core reaction was, how does this work with games, especially multiplayer games like Battlefield 3? If you start throwing would Battlefield 3 be able to be played on your PC off a 360 disc? Because then you run into the question of when you get put into a server, do you get put into a PC server or do you get put into an actual 360 server? And then on top of that, because content on the press disc for the 360 and PS3 are supposed to be less than what you're getting on the PC, you run into an issue there too, because if you're putting on the PC side, would you have to then download the extra content to your actual computer to be able to play so that you have all the content available, like the wider maps? Because they're supposed to be shrinking maps because the content is so large, it's not going to fit on one disc. So there's a lot of compatibility issues, especially with multiplayers, and that's the first thing that popped to mind with me.
Well, I kind of had a similar reaction, but to me, it kind of seemed like they're going to be creating like a gaming monopoly almost.
Microsoft do something like that? No.
I know. Who would have thought? But yeah, they're trying to create this gaming monopoly where you're going to want an Xbox because its games can be played just about anywhere, or at least on Windows PCs. I mean, do you kind of agree or disagree with that?
My first thought is actually that they'd be cutting out the Xbox, wouldn't they? Because therefore you could just buy a PC and you would be able to play PC exclusive titles and your 360 exclusive titles, and therefore you have a multimedia platform that's just a Windows-driven PC.
Yeah.
So my thought was actually, I think, opposite of what you were saying. They're just, well, not opposite, but it's just, it cuts off the need directly for an Xbox. And especially since your controller is actually compatible with any USB port if you have the wired one, then you get the wireless adapter for the wireless controllers.
I was just going to make note that, kind of like contrary to what you were saying, is it may cut out Xbox, like people that actually buy Xboxes. So computers, granted they're a lot cheaper now, are still going to be more expensive than buying an actual Xbox. And then also on top of that, to me it kind of seems like a niche thing for Windows 8 to do. Like, look at how powerful it is. Windows 8 can do this and play Xbox games. And then by the time that people adopt that, like, Xbox gaming on their PC, the Xbox 720 is going to come out, or whatever the next generation is. So I think by the time that this actually, like, factors in and becomes apparent or, like, has relevancy, Xbox 360 may not be as big as it was because the new system might be out.
Yeah, I could see how this might be a niche kind of a thing. But it also kind of, I don't know, to me it kind of stretches to the point where, you know, they're kind of just crossing as many boundaries as they possibly can. You know, like, rather than keep things separate, everything is getting combined. Because, I mean, Microsoft doesn't care if you spend $300 on Windows 8 or you spend $300 on an Xbox, because the money's all going back to them one way or another anyways.
Yeah.
You know, it's just giving more options to the gamers. Assuming that everything is equal, you know, and your PC could play, you know, Xbox 360 games to their limit, you know, which one do you want to play on?
Mm-hmm. I feel like, I guess I want to make note that the source that we kind of got this from is, was a big rumor. Like, they want to make it apparent that it's a rumor so far. So, you know, obviously things can change, but, just the fact that getting your PC up to, like, Xbox playing standards, like, as far as getting a controller that works with it, granted, you can use your Xbox controller, like Justin said, if you have a USB one or if you have the little wireless adapter. So you have that. And then usually when you plug that in, it doesn't map the best to the Windows game controller, at least the last time I tried it. So sometimes you have to get an extra program to make that run better. However, who knows, maybe the Xbox 360 ROM or whatever would recognize a controller and work fine. And I don't know, I feel like it would be a cool thing to do for somebody that had the money and time to really, like, hey, look what my PC can do, when the guy down the street's going to be like, you know, screw you, I have an Xbox that does the same thing and that's all I need.
Yeah, and speaking of that, oftentimes you're either one or the other. You either play a PC generally, and you may have a console, but generally you're just a PC, or you're like me, and you play on console, and your PC is just for surfing the web and work and whatever schoolwork you might have. So while, again, the application sounds cool, I kind of agree with Ian that it's going to be hit or miss. It actually probably benefits the general PC players more, because if there's an Xbox exclusive title they want, they could upgrade to Windows 8 and be able to play that without having to leave the PC at all. But generally, I think Ian's right. You know, when you think of somebody that owns a console, either they're a hardcore console gamer and they just play that, or, you know, they're a casual gamer who has it to supplement their home entertainment system.
Well, do you think if this does go through, because of course this is still just a rumor, but if you think this went through and this was a reality, would this create a stronger gaming community?
It's interesting because I watch a lot of Battlefield Bad Company 2 videos, and there can be some pretty big jerks about being PC only for Battlefield on there. And I wonder if you could use your 360 Battlefield 3 game on the PC. Like, you could play both on the 360 and on the PC by just having to pay for one copy. If that would bring the community together, because maybe, let's say there's a content provider for YouTube that creates Battlefield videos, and he goes, and he's exclusive to 360, and then he jumps on the PC, and after, you know, creating, you know, a week or whatever, he's really good on the PC too. Does it then drive a divide between these generally two separate communities and just saying, look, you know, I'm just as good as I am on a 360. There's no difference between, you know, the noobs or whatever that are on both systems. There's bad players on both systems, and I can take advantage of them. But I'm not sure that it would specifically create a stronger community. I think
they're still, because you're still essentially playing the Xbox version of, for in this instance, Battlefield. You're still playing that version of it. And let's say it controls a little differently because you're using a controller, whereas the PC version, you're using a mouse. It's a little more direct to, like, aim real quick. You know, you're still going to get that mentality that either, like, a console player is going to say, oh, well, you're just pointing and clicking where you want to kill somebody. And then the other, you know, PC player will say, well, it's not the, you know, genuine, full, perfect version of Battlefield.
Yeah, and like I said, that would be dependent on if you could get, like, the full downloads using your Xbox 360 game to allow you to play on a PC at that point where you could use, because obviously if you try and use a controller going against people using a PC version, you're just going to get wrecked. There's no way that you're going to be able to compensate for the amount of control you get by a mouse and keyboard. But yeah, I'm not so sure that it would essentially. It'd be interesting. I think there's a chance it might in certain communities. But overall, I'm not sure it is. I think it would generally just stay the same.
I would question whether it would or it wouldn't. Control is a local and a preference thing anyways. So it would really just be connecting all those Xbox 360 Battlefield players to the PC Battlefield players. And, like, whether or not they held their own standard would be up to them as to who they want to play with. But then again, it would also be an interesting question to see how those multiplayer servers would be either bridged or left separate to where just Xbox 360 people be playing together, whether on a PC or not, and then all those, you know, Steam players would play together as their own community.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like, not even with the Windows 8 idea, is publishers like EA, when they put a game out on, like, every console, everybody always wants it to be like, oh, you could sign on 360 and connect with a PS3 gamer and play, like, you know, Madden Online or FIFA against, like, anybody that has the game, not necessarily the console. Though I think that'd be interesting and cool to do, and they are making a push for it with, like, some of the next EA games that are coming out. It's still, I think there's still such a difference in how you build a game for a console and how it will react and play. So, like, somebody's gonna have some kind of an advantage on PS3, whereas on Xbox they might not have that. Same with PC.
So do you think this is something that Sony would need to react to?
If it takes off, I could totally see them doing that, but it being Sony, they'd probably be like, oh, well, we're gonna make our own computer with freeway ramps for arms. Sorry, that's from Futurama. I mean, again, with Sony, you have a Blu-ray disc, and a lot of, you know, computers that are coming out now have a Blu-ray player that could probably read those same discs. Whereas I know the Microsoft, there's a certain chip that's in the DVD ROMs that helps read the game. And I don't know if you can solve that with, like, just a software issue or if it would have to be hardware. But I guess to answer your question, to go all the way back, is I don't think I would see Sony spending that much money to kind of meet the push for that.
Yeah, you see, I would see Sony strengthening their ties to Steam.
Okay.
As they've already done with Portal 2, you know, where if you bought the PS3 version of Portal 2, you got the Steam version for free.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I heard about that as well.
So, I mean, if Microsoft all of a sudden decided to allow Windows 8 PCs to be able to run Xbox 360 games, I would see Sony saying, oh yeah, well now you get, if you buy any PS3 game, you get the Steam version for free, and kind of try to combine communities that way.
Yeah, that to me, that sounds like how Blu-rays already kind of are being put out, like the movies. It's like, you buy a Blu-ray, you get the DVD version and the free download version. which it kind of ties back to that whole, like, everything's coming together as, like, one thing, one place to get all your media. Like, soon, I mean, Windows or Microsoft has their Windows Phone. I mean, how long is it before phones and computers and everything, like storage space and whatnot, isn't really that big of a deal? And I'm going off on a tangent here, so I apologize. But so you have, like, a lot of cloud computing now, a lot of people not needing to buy a disk, not needing to have storage on their phone. You could have a Windows device that would go to the cloud to get a game, never have to download it. It'd be one place to get everything. You could have your Windows on your phone, Office, blah, blah, blah. And you just come home and kind of plug in there. Like, who knows? I don't know. Maybe it's that thing that there's not going to be really physical games coming up. But then we go back to the retailers who might kill us if we take them out of the picture.
Yeah, exactly.
They are bloodthirsty.
So, but let's take this scenario now. You have a person who's playing, who just has a PC, and, you know, maybe they would like to get an Xbox, but they can't afford it. And now Windows 8 comes out, and they can upgrade their computer. And now all of a sudden they have access to all of these Xbox 360 games. So, you know, how often do you think something like that would occur? And would that push gaming as an industry further into the mainstream?
That's interesting, because a lot of those, I'll just use Battlefield Bad Company 2 as an example. A lot of the guys watching YouTube are some of them are PC exclusive. But when you get into allowing them to play Xbox games, I think the push might increase the sales a little bit for these people who are now able to buy games that are just exclusive to the Xbox to play on their PC. Or maybe even, you hear a lot of times that, like, games that were Xbox exclusive there or made for the consoles don't get the same type of support on the PC that they should. So maybe that would move these players on the PC to sometimes buy the console game for a 360 to play on that system. As in that example, I think I could see that being a viable option for a lot of PC exclusives or like a PC exclusive players, because now you're offering them a whole new game library to pick from, not just what they can get on PC, but any exclusive titles that are to the 360.
Yeah, well, I mean, now all those players are going to have access to that bargain bin at Target or whatever, and, you know, kids are going to be able to, you know, save up their allowance, run to the local box, you know, brick and mortar store, and, you know, pick up something and play it right on their PC. So, you know, whether or not that's going to push gaming in general into the mainstream would be, you know, something interesting to keep an eye on, at least.
Yeah, I think this whole Windows 8 support is better for PC players. I can just because, yeah, you know, like you said, it opens up the library and so much more opportunities for these people to play games than from what they were. Because now they have not only Xbox 360s, but as well as the PC exclusives they've had all along.
All right, so let's shift focus a little bit and move on to our final segment, which is what I like to call the advent of the MMO on console gaming. We've seen recently a lot of MMOs starting to move onto the PlayStation 3 specifically, with games like DC Universe Online, and now we just saw with E3 the announcement of Dust 513, I think it was, which is connected to the EVE Online universe. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting phenomenon where you're getting these games, putting them on your consoles, and playing them like you would WoW or something like that.
Yeah. I find it kind of interesting because both Justin and myself were big Star Wars Galaxies players. And right before that game died, and it officially dies at the end of this year, but they did a lot of, like, what they would call, like, upgrades to it to make it more WoW-like. But I remember reading, this was, like, right before PS3 and Xbox 360 were coming out, is that they did that to essentially port it to the PS3. And obviously what happened was they changed the game so much that like half their player base left, which probably didn't help them support the port to PS3. But, I mean, there's always been a want and a need to, you know, a desire to play MMOs on a console, because kind of like how MMOs run is like you always have to be upgrading your system with each update because they keep enhancing the graphics because it's kind of like a living game. Whereas if you have it on a console, you're going to have those strict standards where you have the video card that can run it and, you know, the power to run this MMO that really shouldn't change. So I could see, I don't know, I think granted, you'd have to be paying a fee, but that's to keep the actual game running. I don't know how much, like, Sony would get of that, but it'd be kind of interesting to have an actual, like, a real MMO on a console.
The problem I see with it is, especially with, and I thought, isn't the Dust a third-person or first-person shooter, actually?
I think so, yeah.
I was talking to some of the guys I work with who actually play EVE Up Online, and it's just supposed to be based in the EVE universe, but it has some type of connectivity to actually EVE Online in some way or form. I thought it might have been monetary is one of the ways. And that actually, doing it that way sounds really interesting to me, especially since EVE Online is more of like a space travel and like a commerce-based and a guild-oriented system. Having an interactivity with the console in the form of like a first-person shooter or third-person shooter sounds really interesting to me. But in the pure aspect of the MMO, you run into trouble with the hotkeying. It's kind of like an RTS problem, you know, where you hotkey masks amongst the troops. In an MMO, you have to hotkey commands or something like that, and with the button layout.
Well, to that point, though, is both PlayStation, I know PlayStation for sure, but maybe not, like, Xbox, you can hook up an actual keyboard USB. PlayStation, I think you can do mouse and keyboard. So, because I remember when PS3 was, like, first coming out, and that's one of the reasons that they got hacked and whatnot, is because there was the opportunity to use it more like a computer. You could put a Linux operating system on it and use it like, you know, like a computer. So I think like the way that PS3 is built, maybe that's why there's a lot of MMOs, you know, targeting PS3 and saying, hey, we should probably go on that console. I mean, you reach a bigger audience who may not, you know, be able to upgrade their computer systems or whatever.
Yeah, I guess in that aspect, you could, it would work, especially for Sony, who would then be allowed to sell as accessories to accessorize your PS3 to be able to play it. The problem, I mean, I guess, you know, in that aspect, it would probably work because then not only do you get the accessories, you get download content.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
For the sales and updates or, you know, any expansions, you know, that they may be adding, you would buy online and that add to it. The last problem I see within is the life of the game. I mean, Galaxies came out in 2003.
Was it better? I can't remember.
I think it was 2003, and it's dying in 2012. So it came out before the 360 and PS3, before it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, depending on an MMO and how long it runs, how long do you support that MMO for the life of your console?
As long as the money keeps coming in.
I mean, but at some point, like, you know, as you were saying, that the next-gen systems are just around the corner. Despite what anybody wants to tell you, you know within the next 2 years you're going to start hearing about the next PS4 or 720 or whatever it may be. So if you put an MMO out on the PS3 now, how long are you going to want to run the servers to support that game? I mean, you just look at the games now. I mean, the servers for Halo 2, which came out, what was Halo 2, 2004, 2005 it came out?
For the original Xbox, yeah, I think.
Yeah, and that came down now. So that had, was it last winter? So I think that was 5 years they ran the servers. And they took the servers down for those. And people were still playing them. They just weren't getting as much on it. So you run into the issue of how long are you going to keep the servers alive and the service alive for that. Based on where a PC, it'll, you know, on PC, you know, it's just going to keep running as long as the money's coming in.
That's true. Yeah.
The service for keeping that up on PC is a lot less because the PC is, you just upgrade your PC constantly.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's interesting is, and this is more PC gaming, but like a lot of MMOs tend to go for, you know, they do their main run of buy the game for $60 and pay for a certain amount. A lot of them after like the prime, I guess you could call it, like their peak, is they turn the game into play for free. You can do the first like, you know, 20 levels of your character for free. And then as you start progressing, then it's going to be like, oh, well, I'll buy the rest of the game or buy the content. And a good example is the Conan game. You can play till like level 20. If you want to buy like an actual specific item, like a specific sword, you can pay like actual cash to just get that sword for your character or that armor. And I'm wondering how, like, instead of buying spending $60 to buy a console version of the game, could they sell it for like that 20 and then you would, you know, pay as you go in there?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's where I see complications coming in, is that, you know, the PS3 and the Xbox 360, like, these consoles were designed for a specific market, for a specific kind of player. And these MMOs kind of have a whole other set of criteria that just seem to not match up that well with consoles, which is why, to me, this is a pretty interesting phenomenon. I mean, you know, the average video game, I'd say, for, like, a console would be, I don't know, 10 hours, 15 hours. You know, meanwhile, these, you know, MMOs are, like you said, living entities. Like, they just have a life of their own. And especially, this is speaking to the PS3 side of things, is that whenever you go to buy some piece of DLC or whatever, you have to go to the PS store and buy it and shut down the game. So, like, a freemium model, to me, doesn't seem like that's going to work at all on a PlayStation unless they improve that PSN, you know, game interface where you don't have to leave the game to buy items.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, like, I'm not sure how it works on PlayStation 3, but I assume it's fairly similar to on Xbox. Like, FIFA 11, if you want to buy, for the Ultimate Team, buy those, you know, the card packs, you never really have to. I mean, technically the Xbox guide comes up and you spend your money and then it goes away real quick. Like, mm-hmm. if they could integrate that into how PS3 is, because I'm not certain, but I don't think PS3 has that ability to, like you were saying, you know, you're in the game, you buy something, a screen just comes up, pay your money, and then it goes away and downloads in the background. I think PS3, like you're saying, you always have to go back to the menu system, wait for it to download, and then go back in to restart the game.
Yeah, well, you have to back out in one way or another, download and install the game, and
yeah.
then go back in. And then that doesn't seem to really work at all. But, and then especially with the pricing structure, too. New games on the PlayStation or the Xbox, you know, $60, and then that's it. And if you want more, you can get more, but, you know, that's only if DLC is available. But now with these MMOs, like, they thrive on that, all that extra content. So now you're going to be making your initial $60 investment. Plus, now you got to shell out money either monthly and you get everything, or through these microtransactions in a freemium model.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that I could see working like this is essentially like Guild Wars. Guild Wars is you buy the game, $60, whatever, and then you play it whenever you want to. You have free servers to go on. There's no monthly fee, and they update the game as you're not paying for updates all the time. You may pay for like an add-on pack, but to me, like, granted it's on PC, but that to me sounds like how console games are working right now. Like, you buy the full game, you play it, you can go online, and when something new comes out, you buy it, and it's an add-on.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I did with exactly with Guild Wars, because they came out with Guild Wars, which was the core game, and then they had three expansion packs, all of which are escaping the names are escaping me. But I ended up buying all three expansion packs, and it was like, I think it was, the starting prices for the expansion packs were like $30 or $35. So it wasn't the full price of the game. And Guild Wars was like $50 or $55 when we bought it.
Something like that. Yeah.
And so you buy an expansion pack. That would work. But what you're saying in the essence with an actual, like, Galaxies, what they...
Monthly cost.
What they had talked about when Ian and I were playing, it was a monthly cost. I mean, besides just paying whatever we paid for the game, let's just say $60, it was $14.95 a month for the character. So, I mean, that's something a console player would have to generally get over. Because I don't know how many console players, you know, play MMOs generally, you know.
Right. It's kind of like they want that, like, one-and-done experience. Like, you start off your character, you go through the story, done. All right, cool. Whereas MMOs, it's like you essentially have to live in that game. Like, you know, and maybe that's how you can say that it's worth that, you know, $15 monthly fee, is because the game doesn't end. I mean, yeah, you can do a bunch of stuff and follow the storyline, but you can always just run around and, you know, go kill stuff.
And battle other players.
Yeah, like, but then you have to ask yourself, well, why isn't Halo, Modern Warfare, Battlefield charging to play their multiplayers yet?
Yeah, but I mean, with that, you would just say it's just the content place, because that would be like in an MMO. They you buy, like let's take Guild Wars. You buy Guild Wars, and it's just a linear story. You know, the outside and the other endeavors of other MMOs generally aren't there, but it does have a battle arena for PvP.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's essentially, you know what, that's a bad argument, because I'm disagreeing with you. Because it's essentially the same thing, because you're just, you know, instead of paying for that. I guess what you end up paying for is the massive amount of content that the animal is supposed to be giving you on a on basically a monthly basis, like add-ons and whatnot, aside from the giant actual expansion packs that you have to pay for.
All right, so that's going to pretty much do it for us. So I'd like to thank you guys for coming on. Why don't you let everybody know how we can get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can go to zombiehood.com, just how it's pronounced. And then you can also follow us on Twitter at Ian Corrao, and it's I-A-N-C-O-R-R-A-O. We also have a Facebook page, but we're still working on that kind of
thing. Yeah, and we'll have all those links at the bottom of our show notes. Please make sure to visit our site, newgamernation.com. You can follow us on Twitter at newgamernation, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/newgamernations. Again, we'd like to thank you guys for coming on. Please rate and check out our iTunes page and make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It really helps us out. So thanks again for listening and talk to you real soon.